not show up always in terms of protests, but that type of engagement is transformative with our students. Mm-hmm. We also have a program where we pair our Morehouse students in our first year experience courses with Congolese students, and they engage in conversation. So I think that's very important. We also recognize the connection of the Congo to the current situation in the Middle East. The fact that President Biden has tried to strike a deal with Dan Gertler, the noted conflict mineral mining magnate, who's also Israeli, and who has been using those profits in many ways. Those have gone to enrich him, but also vicariously the Israeli state, and therefore the oppression, contributing to the oppression of Palestinian people. So those connections are there, and we raised the flag, we held up the flag, because we couldn't rely on just a chant, mm-hmm. because that could be ignored. And even if we gave an interview, maybe not like this one, but with the New York Times, for example, New York Times gave a story on the fact that there had been no protests at HBCUs, or relatively few. And, you know, I was really misquoted in terms of saying that Joe Biden seems like a decent person. But I don't know, why am I saying that again? I shouldn't be even saying it again. But compared to Donald Trump, I guess anybody could be a decent person. But he does not get it. He does not. He may have the Dr. King bust in the Resolute Desk, or at the Resolute Desk in the Oval Office.
I'm Naomi Klein, and you are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM.
KBOO Community Radio is listener-sponsored. What that means is that 80% of our funding comes from donations from listeners just like you. Right now, during the last week of our spring membership drive, your support can go even farther. Contribute today at bit.ly/KBOO. That's bit.ly/KBOO. And your donation will be matched dollar for dollar up to $20,000 thanks to the generous support of a group of anonymous donors. Maximize the impact of your support for KBOO right now and help us reach our $60,000 goal by May 25th. Thanks so much.
Hey, Michael here. I'm with the Tin Can Phone Podcast, a radio show where you can hear about the influence incarceration has straight from the source. We tell you the story from the inside out, so make sure to check us out on KBOO Community Radio every first Tuesday at 10 a.m.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on this spring membership drive edition of the KBOO Evening News, Oregon expects low voter turnout for Tuesday's midterm election.
The Multnomah County Health Department releases its report on fentanyl overdose deaths in the last 5 years.
And the county signs a $40 million contract to expand armed and unarmed security personnel.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Monday, May 20th, 2024. KBOO is in the final days of our spring membership drive, and we'd like to urge you to become a member by going online to bit.ly/KBOO. I'm Ezra.
And I'm Reed Johnson. Tuesday is the final day for Oregonians to cast their votes in the state's primary election. Fewer than 40% of Oregon's registered voters are expected to participate. As of last Thursday, only 14.1% of the state had voted. This is customary in years without much contention over Democratic and Republican presidential nominations. This year largely compares with 2018, when turnout was only 34.7%. That's in comparison to 2016, where contested Democratic and Republican primaries pushed turnout to 54%. Outside of the presidential campaign, Democratic voters have important decisions to make in federal congressional races. They will decide who will succeed retiring U.S. Representative Earl Blumenauer in Oregon's 3rd Congressional District, as well as who will face Republican Lori Chavez DeRemer in Oregon's 5th in the fall. These races have attracted national attention over the flood of outside spending into congressional campaigns. The Intercept and other outlets report AIPAC, the pro-Israel lobbying group, has been a major backer of 3rd Congressional District candidate Maxine Dexter. Dexter's campaign is set to top $3 million in funding by Tuesday as she looks to defeat former Multnomah County Commissioner Sushila Jayapal, an outspoken critic of Israel's military campaign in Gaza. Major party voters will also decide who runs for Secretary of State and Attorney General. Voters of all affiliations will choose county commissioners, district attorneys, and sheriffs, among other nonpartisan public officials. In Multnomah County, local voters will decide in the district attorney race, pitting incumbent Mike Schmidt against Nathan Vasquez. Voters have until Tuesday to submit their ballots, that is, tomorrow. Ballots can be dropped into official ballot collection bins by 8 p.m. Tuesday. Alternatively, voters can postmark their ballots for Tuesday. They will count even if they reach election offices later in the week.
Nearly $3 million of dark money have flown into Oregon's 3rd Congressional District race. A major beneficiary of these funds has been State Representative Maxine Dexter, a pulmonologist running for Earl Blumenhauer's vacant seat in Oregon's 3rd Congressional District. Her opponents include former Multnomah County Commissioner Sushila Jayapal and Gresham City Councilor Eddie Morales. They have spoken out against the spending and argue that Dexter hasn't condemned the dark money enough. The money comes from primarily two political action committees, 314 Action Fund and Voters for a Responsive Government, or VRG. Both PACs registered after the disclosure deadline and won't need to disclose their donors until today. Reporting by The Intercept, Portland Mercury, and other news outlets suggest the unprecedented funding is in no small part a reaction to Jayapal's outspoken pro-Palestinian sentiments. Her sustained calls for a ceasefire since November have set her apart from other candidates and made her the target of mailer ads. Millions of PAC dollars have gone toward attacking Jayapal for her handling of Portland's homelessness and addiction crises. The Intercept cites two anonymous Democratic Congress members who say AIPAC has discreetly targeted Jayapal by funneling money to Dexter through 314. The Portland Mercury has investigated Dexter's individual contributors list and found the campaign received thousands from people who have donated to pro-Israel PACs like AIPAC, as well as Republican politicians. This includes former Trump campaign finance chair Larry Mitzel, who contributed the maximum donation to Dexter's campaign. Dexter, like her primary opponents, Jayapal and Morales, has been a proponent of abortion access, LGBTQ plus rights, and climate action. She has also messaged on supporting a ceasefire in Gaza. Dexter has spoken out against PAC funding of attack ads against Jayapal. She has remained quiet about dark money support for her own campaign. Portland voters passed a measure to limit campaign financing in 2018. The widespread support mirrors state support for campaign finance reform, which coalesced in a bill passed through state Congress this March. These reforms do not, however, affect federal races. Currently, under federal law, super PACs have no funding limit, leaving them free to continue to influence Oregon elections in significant ways in the future.
Oregonians aren't the only ones headed to the polls on Tuesday for their primary election. Idaho voters will too. But future primaries in Idaho could look different. A voter initiative in the state could make future primaries open to people regardless of their party affiliation. Eric Tagedoff has more on the story.
As this year's primary approaches, supporters of a voter initiative in Idaho hope future primaries will look different. Idaho's primaries are being held on Tuesday. Earlier this month, supporters of the Open Primary Initiative exceeded the number of signatures needed to appear on the November ballot and are awaiting verification. The measure would get rid of the state's closed primary system. Margaret Kinzel with Mormon Women for Ethical Government says a small percentage of voters in primaries aligned with the state's dominant Republican Party essentially decide elections.
So if you want to have any voice at all on who your elected officials will be, you have to vote in the Republican primary. And with it being closed, you have to align with the Republican Party.
The initiative would replace the current system with a top four primary open to everyone, regardless of party affiliation. It would also create a ranked choice voting system for the general election. Opponents say the systems proposed are too complicated. Kinzel says under the current primary system, less moderate candidates have a better shot at winning. She says the Open Primaries Initiative would change that.
To promote more civil discourse, you have to appeal to a broader range of voters in order to make it through both the primary and the general election. And we're just hoping that that's going to create more conversations between candidates and their constituents.
Kinzel says a tenet of her Mormon faith includes the respect and dignity of each individual.
Open primaries really plays into that by trying to ensure that all people hear and are heard, particularly in our governmental processes. So it really does come back to a matter of faith for us.
For Northern Rockies News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
The Multnomah County Health Department released a report on fentanyl overdose deaths from 2018 to 2023. It's been the first report of its kind for the county and illustrates a starting rise in deaths in the last year. From an average of 2 people who died of fentanyl overdoses a month in 2018 and 2019, the number rose to nearly 36 people a month who suffered fatal overdoses in Multnomah County in 2023. The spike coincides with fentanyl's large-scale introductions into Oregon's illegal drug economy in 2020. This according to law enforcement seizure data. The Multnomah County Health Department Director Rachel Banks released a statement following the report. She said, quote, "Each death counted in this report represents a real person. The grief and heartbreak of those close to them and the trauma felt throughout our community as a result of their loss," end quote. Most overdose deaths occurred last year occurred in Portland's Old Town and Pearl neighborhoods. This is where a large amount of the metro area's social service providers are located. The correlation between fentanyl overdoses and poverty is significant. The report found that 20% of people who suffered fatal fentanyl overdoses were likely experiencing homelessness. That number jumped to 25% in 2023. While demographically most who died were white males between 35 and 44, the report found, quote, "When accounting for population sizes, the rate of overdose was much higher for American Indian/Alaskan Native and Black and African American communities compared to other communities," end quote. The county continues to track overdose deaths in real time through the medical examiner's office. There are currently 278 suspected overdose deaths and 47 confirmed in Multnomah County this year.
Multnomah County officials signed a 5-year, $40 million contract, armed and unarmed security contract in February. The county has already deployed 109 of the more than 170 officers agreed to in the contract with Pasadena, California-based security company Intercon Security Systems. This number represents the strongest security force in county history. It dwarfs the 52 county-funded security officers in 2021. Armed and unarmed officers will be stationed in county office buildings, public libraries, homeless shelters, and health clinics. Several officers will be, quote, "dedicated to video monitoring and dispatch," end quote. The contract comes as a response to concerns by county employees for increased safety measures in government facilities. A December 2023 report by the county auditor found that librarians faced increasing threatening behavior by patrons. They were also having to respond more often to drug use and mental health crises. The county's contract with Intercon is not the first with a private security company. The county stressed that this contract, however, improves upon previous security contracts. Significantly, Intercon will maintain a 24/7 central monitoring station with responsibilities including the dispatch of security patrol and services to incidents. Security guards will also have a higher level of training, including in de-escalation procedures, safe driving, and trauma-informed practices. Among security staff duties will be escorting county staff to and from their vehicles.
The Bureau of Land Management has finalized 2 rules that proponents say will protect more public lands for conservation. The agency manages 15.7 million acres in Oregon. Eric Tegedoff has more on the story.
Conservation groups say 2 new federal rules aim to help better protect public lands, including national parks. The Bureau of Land Management's public lands rule ensures that conservation use is equal to extraction and development in decision-making on lands the agency manages. The BLM oversees 15.7 million acres in Oregon, about a quarter of the state's land area. Matthew Kirby with the National Parks Conservation Association says the rule is also good news for national parks like the John Day Fossil Beds National Monument, which is surrounded by BLM lands.
When we think about what is conserving the park resource look like, we need to look at the larger landscape and look across the health of the entire landscape. And this public lands rule is going to begin to give us that sort of tool.
The rules also identify conservation tools to restore degraded lands and keep natural landscapes intact. Opponents say it's part of an effort to block extraction and development on public lands. The second new rule from the BLM overhauls oil and gas drilling leasing rules to prevent poorly sited drilling and keep development away from national parks. Kirby says these are important changes.
Taken together, these 2 rules really bring a semblance of balance back to our public lands and will allow the Bureau of Land Management to actually fulfill its obligation to manage those lands for multiple uses.
The BLM manages 245 million acres of land in the U.S. For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
Washington State is investing in bringing high-speed internet to more people in rural areas. The Washington State Public Works Board has approved $20 million, largely in eastern Washington, and particularly in distressed areas, for infrastructure projects to connect people to broadband internet. Sheila Richardson is programs manager for the board.
Cities, counties, ports, PUDs, private providers, they're all working really hard and being really creative on how they can leverage all these different funding sources to build out and make sure that these communities aren't getting left behind.
Richardson says the funding will help connect about 6,000 people to broadband in the state. Washington also recently received approval of its proposal for the Broadband Equity Access and Deployment Program, which will allow the state to request access to $1.2 billion in federal funding to increase connectivity. Richardson says ensuring people are connected to high-speed internet is important for a number of reasons.
It's going to impact the local economics if there's access to broadband. People are able to work from home. We know it increases home value. It really kind of levels the playing field for everybody in our state, regardless of where you live.
Richardson notes that the Public Works Board has retained about $500,000 for replacing or restoring broadband in the event of an emergency.
The GOP House votes to hold Attorney General Garland in contempt of Congress. Donald Trump again accuses Joe Biden of being on drugs. And many veterans say restrictive voter ID laws erode the democracy they fought for. With more on the story, it's Edwin J. Vieira with 2024 Talks.
Welcome to 2024 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
The effort to threaten to defund our investigations and the way in which there are contributions to an atmosphere that puts our agents and our prosecutors at risk, these are wrong.
Attorney General Merrick Garland says a GOP-controlled House vote to hold him in contempt undermines the Justice Department's ability to run independent investigations. House Democrats say Republicans are agitating to get the audio of Special Counsel Robert Hur's interview with President Joe Biden for campaign ads. The transcripts are already available. The president's campaign says criticism of his age and mental stamina are unjustified, but Speaker of the House Mike Johnson faults the White House for withholding tapes under executive privilege, saying Biden is robbing voters of a chance to decide for themselves.
They obviously confirm what the special counsel has found and would likely cause, I suppose, in his estimation, such alarm with the American people that the president is using all of his power to suppress their release.
Israeli Cabinet Minister Benny Gantz is threatening to resign June 8th unless Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu develops a better post-war strategy. His demands include a clear plan for replacing Hamas and governing Gaza without the full Israeli occupation favored by the Prime Minister's far-right allies. Gantz could beat Netanyahu if a government collapse leads to an early election, but other members of the coalition war cabinet are voicing similar concerns that Gaza could turn into a guerrilla war. Speaking at a National Rifle Association convention, former President Donald Trump floated the idea of being a three-term president, citing FDR's four terms. He also called for drug testing before the debates and made the baseless charge that Biden was high during the State of the Union.
He did the State of the Union the other day. He was high as a kite. So I think we should call for drug tests on the debate.
Meanwhile, Biden is calling out Trump and other Republicans for culture war attacks.
My predecessor and extreme MAGA friends are responsible for taking away other fundamental freedoms, from the freedom to vote to the freedom to choose. But I've always believed that the promise of America is big enough for everyone to succeed, and I mean that.
Florida Governor and former presidential hopeful Ron DeSantis just signed a law requiring the state policy documents to delete the phrase climate change. Florida Democrats say a state that could soon end up underwater can't afford to ignore sea level rise. Veterans say they're outraged by a proposed New Hampshire voter ID law. It would be one of the country's strictest, requiring proof of citizenship to register and eliminating an affidavit process helping new voters without documentation. Former U.S. Marine Corps Major and Durham Town Councilor Curtis Register says it disenfranchises those who fight to preserve our most basic rights.
Feels like a betrayal of those that have been injured or sacrificed time away from their kids, or even an ultimate sacrifice that we have folks trying to take away rights that were given via the Constitution.
I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
You are listening to a spring membership drive edition of the KBOO Evening News. Our goal is to raise $60,000 by May 25th. We'd like to remind you that you can become a member at any time during this broadcast by going online to bit.ly/KBOO. You can also text KBOO to the number 44321. Stay tuned after this newscast for Coast Range Radio. Hosts will be interviewing the organizers of a successful tree sit that saved the poor windy old growth forest near Medford from being sold. At 6 p.m., it's Labor Radio. At 6:30, it's Prison Pipeline. Then at 7, Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather will be cloudy with an overnight low of 45 degrees. Tomorrow's weather, it's back to the rain with a high of 56. Today in history, in 1932, Amelia Earhart takes off from Newfoundland to begin the world's first solo nonstop flight across the Atlantic Ocean by a female pilot, landing in Ireland the next day. The quote of the day is from English philosopher John Stuart Mill, born this day in 1806. He said, quote, "The peculiar evil of silencing the expression of an opinion is that it is robbing the human race, posterity, as well as the existing generation, those who descend from the opinion, still more than those who hold it. If the opinion is right, they are deprived of the opportunity of exchanging error for truth. If wrong, they lose what is almost as great a benefit, the clearer perception and livelier impression of truth produced by its collision with error."
The Alaska legislature passes a bill on missing and murdered Indigenous people. It's aimed at bringing more resources and attention to the problem, which is important in a state that has one of the highest rates of MMIP. With that story and more, it's Jill Freitas with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Jill Freitas, filling in for Antonia Gonzalez. Alaska has the fourth highest rate of missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls in the nation, and among cities, Anchorage has the third highest numbers. It's a problem the state has mostly ignored, but as KMBA's Rhonda McBride reports, the state legislature passed a bill to bring both attention and resources to the problem.
I want to be sure that I convey that this epidemic is impacting every region of the state.
Representative C.J. McCormick says the bill is finally a response to those who have long cried out for the state to address the crisis of missing and murdered Alaska Natives, a cause, he says, that goes well beyond the list of names.
There's individuals that I went to school with. Unfortunately, my staffer who helped work on this bill has family members that are a part of these lists as well. I'm sure there's members of this body who even have family members that are a part of this list.
The Bethel Democrat says the legislation aims to reduce these lists by hiring two permanent MMIP investigators to focus on unsolved cases. It also requires police training to include cultural education and creates a 9-member review commission.
I really encourage people to keep speaking their truth because this is how we create change.
Charlene Uppuck says it's exciting that so many groups came together to champion the bill. Uppuck is director of Data for Indigenous Justice and says the best part is that Alaska Natives help build this coalition by tapping into their traditional values, which focuses on building relationships and using the power of storytelling.
And as we carried those stories, collected the data, and said it over and over and over again, and then we have our collective voices, that's the power of that. That changes from being just a situation that happened one-off to a collective truth that cannot be denied.
But at least one lawmaker denied his vote for the bill, Representative David Eastman, a Republican from Wasilla. He questioned the need for police to get cultural training and worries the bill might add to an already heavy workload. In Anchorage, I'm Rhonda McBride.
The St. Regis Mohawk Tribal Police has been awarded an over $850,000 grant from the New York State Division of Criminal Justice Services as part of the Law Enforcement Grant Program. This grant will allow the tribal police to modernize their operations and increase their ability to effectively solve and prevent crime by being able to purchase things like license plate readers, computer-aided dispatch systems, advanced software solutions, drones, and gunshot detection devices. In a statement, SRMT Chief of Police Matthew Rourke said, quote, "I would like to thank the governor's office for making the St. Regis Mohawk Tribal Police a direct recipient of grant funding. The new technology and equipment we will be able to purchase with these funds will greatly enhance our capabilities and help us better serve and protect our community," end quote. Rourke says SRMT will utilize this additional funding to ensure the safety and security of all residents. Sea Alaska Heritage Institute has published a trilogy of illustrated dictionaries that teach vocabulary for the Tlingit, Haida, and Tsimshian languages. The series, developed by SHI staff and contributors, features everyday Tlingit, everyday Haida, and everyday Tsimshian, and is intended to teach native words to children in grades K through 5, but may also be used by people of all ages who want to learn the vocabularies. SHI says the goal is to increase exposure to the Tlingit, Haida, and Tsimshian languages of Southeast Alaska. In the booklets, native words are superimposed over everyday scenes, including the bedroom, bathroom, laundry room, clothes, kitchen, food, and drinks. Each volume includes a glossary with English translations. The books are not currently available for purchase, but SHI is researching ways to further their distribution. I'm Jill Freitas.
Americans could benefit from a new Consumer Financial Protection Bureau rule. It caps credit card late fees at $8 or, at the credit card company's discretion, 25% of the minimum balance due. Consumers across the country would save about $220 per year. But Rebecca Garrard with Citizen Action of New York says the rule is under fire in Congress.
You know, we have a problem with some of our congressional representatives who oppose measures such as this. It's both problematic from a policy standpoint and, quite frankly, confusing from a political standpoint when you think about what the will of their constituents are.
The House Financial Services Committee voted to overturn this regulation a few weeks ago. Garrard and others say this is because committee members are receiving money from corporate donors opposed to the rule. Even so, polls show reducing credit card late fees has strong support across party lines. From CFPB protections being under fire, the agency itself just survived a Supreme Court challenge from conservative groups. Kimberly Fountain, with Americans for Financial Reform, says with the decision out of the way, the CFPB can get back to work.
They are working on requiring fairer credit reports, reducing the harm of medical debt collections, fighting inequity in home appraisals, increasing consumer rights to control their own data, and much more.
She expects battles on consumer protections to continue in Congress. Other rules the agency worked on include closing a loophole exempting overdraft fees from Truth in Lending Act provisions.
Mercedes-Benz workers in Alabama voted against joining the United Auto Workers on Friday. 56% of workers at two of the German car manufacturers' plants near Tuscaloosa, Alabama, voted against the union. The UAW had been building up momentum in its push to organize car manufacturers across the South. The union won a significant victory last month in a union election at a Volkswagen facility in Tennessee. There, workers voted 26-28 to 9-85 in favor of organizing. The Tennessee plant was the first car plant to unionize with a vote since the 1940s. The deciding factor in the UAW victory was likely Volkswagen's neutrality in the workers' organizing campaign. Mercedes-Benz, by contrast, conducted extensive anti-union campaigns in the lead-up to the election. Officials adorned the Alabama facilities with messaging persuading employees to vote no. Public officials also spoke out against the UAW, including Alabama and Tennessee governors, both Republican. As of last year, only 10% of U.S. workers belonged to a union, compared with nearly 25% membership at union's peak in the 1950s. While low union membership has remained consistent, union popularity has surged and amid recent and heavily publicized union strikes. While SAG-AFTRA made modest gains in their negotiations with Hollywood studios and streaming platforms, the UAW won historic wage gains and other reforms in their strike against the big three automakers last fall.
Parents of children harmed by social media platforms are calling on Congress to advance the bipartisan Kids Online Safety Act. The bill would require platforms to default to their most restrictive parental controls, creating a duty of care to protect children. But it's been months since an emotional Senate hearing when Meta CEO Mark Zuckerberg offered a public apology. Deb Schmill of Massachusetts, whose daughter died of an accidental drug overdose after being relentlessly cyberbullied, says Congress can't wait.
It's going to be very upsetting to the parents, to so many people in this country who want to see this happen. They want to see big tech regulated. They don't want to see kids dying every day.
Nearly 70 senators now co-sponsor the bill. A House committee is scheduled to take up the legislation this week. Tech companies have resisted wholesale change, citing free speech rights. A growing amount of evidence points to the dangers of social media for children. Researchers say the addictive platforms incite bullying, substance abuse, and other behaviors, which can lead to self-harm. Schmill says her 18-year-old daughter, Becca, would be alive today if greater protections and regulations on big tech were in place.
We want to do it for our kids, and we want to make sure that no other children die or are harmed by the same design features that have harmed our children.
The Kids Online Safety Act has undergone extensive revisions to earn the support of national LGBTQ plus groups concerned with censorship of content. But groups in more conservative states with restrictive laws remain opposed, along with the ACLU. Still, parents like Schmill say if passed, the legislation will hold social media companies liable for their products and help put the safety of young people over profits.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Monday, May 20th, 2024. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Reed Johnson. This producer is Reed Johnson, and our engineer is Ray Bodwell. Special thanks to Eric Tegadoff, Jill Freitas, Edwin J. Vieira, and Catherine Carley. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282VH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Ezra.
And I'm Reed Johnson.